We're back with the Paula Gordon Show. It is our great pleasure to have Robert Bly with us. Bill Russell and I had two poles of that possibility on order and chaos, and yet one of the things that caught me so by surprise and delight was as I was revisiting your work on The Shadow, a little book on the human shadow, it is called, you were helping me to know through a variety of ways that in the West we are still caught in this dichotomy of it's either or, that the Aristotelian excluded middle, if you will, has been forgotten, and that we have yet to move to a third place where we can know that we will be dust at the feet of a blade of grass. This opening up process, is that part of why you've been so prolific in your translations?
Well, it's interesting. On the way over, Mr. Lux and I were talking about his generation and my generation in poetry, and I'm somewhat older than he. And then the Berryman Lowell generation, and how they felt so overwhelmed by Eliot and Pound that they all drove themselves nuts into various attempts to be intense and usually involving alcohol, and it didn't turn out very well. And I said something like, well, my generation wasn't so caught up in that. It was the end of the Second World War, and we had won the Second World War, and we felt that it was a just war, and we were not ashamed of ourselves as we are now in this Iraq War. We were proud of it, of ourselves, and especially of the men, all the men who had died in that thing. And so there was moments in which we were free from the whole Eliot Pound routine. And then one of the things that helped me so much was to find the great Spanish poets, the great poets in the Spanish language, Pablo Neruda, Cesar Vallejo, and then with the Spaniards themselves, Juan Ramón Jiménez and Antonio Machado. And Juan Ramón did the central poem, I think, for our time there, and I still love it. I am not I. I am this one walking beside me, whom I do not see, whom at times I manage to visit, and at other times I forget. The one who forgives sweet when I hate, the one who remains indoors when I walk, the one who will remain standing when I die. So that's just gorgeous, that I am not I, to think about that possibility.
Did you read The Spaniards in Spanish?
Yeah.
So you had done the work to have the tools to give you access to this world.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it this question of translation, this is beautiful what you just said, and yet if it were in Spanish, would it not be somewhat different?
Yo no soy yo. Soy este que va a mi lado sin yo verlo. Que avece voy a ver, que avece olvido. I am not I. I am this one walking beside me, whom I do not see, whom at times I manage to visit, and at other times I forget. No, the tone is quite the same, and Spanish is close to English in that way. I made an awful lot of mistakes in translation, but not in that poem.
So I don't forget it,
yeah.
You also, in one of the poems that you had translated, I believe from Sanskrit, you said, I cannot go further with this poet because I have neither the richness of the language, I don't have that much command of the language in the translation, and I do not have that experience. And it seemed to me that that was an enormous statement, that one must have the experience as well as the language. Is that as big for you as it was for me?
Yes, I think so. The whole question of translation is an amazing thing. That these gifts have been given in other languages. Spanish is wonderful, and German is unbelievable with Rainer Maria Rilke and so on. But the question is, what do you do with that? And I remember one very vivid time in which I was invited to Vassar, to talk to the graduate students in Spanish. And they knew I was doing these translations and so on. And I said to them, finally, at the end, after we talked a long time, I realized there's a big confusion here. And I said, the problem is, if you're going to translate Garcia Lorca, what you need to know is not Spanish, it's English. how to get those extra levels of ecstatic tones and grammar out of English. Well, they were furious. I mean, they were getting their PhD in Spanish.
The translation is an interesting to me. Interesting that you've spent a great deal of time doing that. The fact that you were also writing now, at least your last two books, in something called a guzzle. Those both would seem to I think a young person who wants to be an artist and to be creative and express themselves, doing both of those would seem to be stunningly restrictive, that you've imposed artifices around you that don't allow you to be creative and express yourself. And yet, more or less as you were saying about knowing the English language, in many ways it's liberating to be able to work in both those forms.
Well, the whole issue of form is terrifically interesting, because when our generation, we're not going to go back to iambic pentameter. We're not going to go back to the sonnets, and so I would be accused of being a barbarian. But we used to, when people would send us poems that were heavily rhymed, we'd send them a little note that said, "This coupon entitles you to buy the next book of Elford Lord Tennyson as soon as it is published." And then they would write us furious letters, and then we would print the letters, say, "There's more passion here than there was in your poem."
Yes.
Anyway, so you can understand, that's how you have fun. That's how you have fun as an editor. So there's all of this matter, but when you have learned how to be spontaneous in your own way, which may take 15 or 20 years, Ginsberg learned it early and did wonderful work, and a lot of people, but it takes some of us a longer time. At a certain point then, what do you do next? And if you don't put it into a form, you're missing something terrific. Because a form has satisfactions, almost like that of lovemaking. I mean, free verse is like making love alone, in a way. this is, of course, doesn't apply to everybody. But so in the guzzle form, which I found when I began to do some translation that Coleman and I did with Rumi and with Hafez and so on, that's the major form that they have.
Speak to what that form is, because many folk won't know what that is about.
So the guzzle began in the 10th century with the Arabs, and then it gradually spread to all of the various languages that are part of the Muslim world. And it has developed several characteristics. First of all, you are given about 36 syllables to have your say on what you want. Suppose you want to talk about walls as Robert Frost, you have 36 syllables. And in their thing, they have two 18-syllable lines, but I mentioned that you can't have an 18-syllable English line. So I go to three 12-syllable lines. But the idea is that that after you've said your syllables, your 12, 36 syllables about walls, you got to go to another subject. Well, Frost didn't have that restriction. He did a marvelous poem about walls. But by having to jump, you also are forced to leap inside your mind. What is it you love about walls? Well, suppose you can't talk about walls. What would that be like in something else? So, therefore, there are leaps inside the poem. And they're just as difficult to follow in the Muslim world as they are here. Because you'll be listening to two or three stanzas, one about God, another one about how much you like tea, and a third one about your wife. And about, what is this poem about? When is this poem going to come into focus? And so then eventually the fifth or sixth or seventh stanza comes into focus. And then you feel a great joy out of that. But another characteristic is that you don't rhyme. But every stanza will end with the same word. And I was reading some last night, and a young woman came up to me and she said, "That was so wonderful when you were doing the joy one, because we kept waiting for the word joy
to
appear."
It's in the other book.
It is.
Yep, it's in the other book.
Okay. Or shall I read this one?
Oh, yes. It's the very end of that wonderful new book of poems.
Yeah, it's a new book called My Sense Was a Thousand Years of Joy. stealing sugar from the castle, and it refers in a way to translation, how much sweetness you can learn from translating Juan Ramon or the Spaniards or Rainer Maria Rilke. It's a certain gift that you get by putting it in your own language that you don't get from simply reading it. Something is translated into sugar when you really do the work on it. We are poor students who stay after school to study joy. So for the old reader of the ghazal, you know that the word is going to be joy. We are like those birds in the India mountains. I am a widow whose child is her only joy. So now in the first stanza, there are going to be two joys after that, one at the end. The only thing I hold in my ant-like head is the builder's plan of the castle of sugar. Just to steal one grain of sugar is a joy. And that's true. Just to steal one grain of sugar is a joy. Like a bird, we fly out of darkness into the hall. This is the old image from Beowulf, which is lit with singing, and then fly out again. Being shut out of the warm hall is also a joy. Well, that's a stretch, but I guess it is. I'm a laggard, a loafer, and an idiot. But I'd love to read about those who caught one glimpse of the face, faces capitalized, and died 20 years later in joy. And these would be the old troubadour poets. I'm a laggard, a loafer, and an idiot, but I'd love to read about those who caught one glimpse of the face and died 20 years later in joy. I don't mind your saying I will die soon. Even in the sound of the word soon, I hear the word you, which begins every sentence of joy. Last stanza. You're a thief, the judge said. Let's see your hands. I showed my calloused hands in court. My sentence was 1,000 years of joy.
This is Robert Bly. We'll be back with the Paula Gordon Show and the honor of having him as guest in a moment.